The world is complicated. When it gets down to legal issues, we turn our attention to our friend Ambrose McCall, who is an attorney here in Peoria who helps us make our way through the new social norms and the legal aspects that go along with it. A lot of it has to do with social media, early conversations these days and this morning, talking about where we stand and are going forward in this world of employers and employees, COVID, vaccines, masks, all of that stuff. Good morning, Ambrose. How are you doing?
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, Dan. Doing fine. Thank you.
We are in a new territory. I think maybe it's not new territory. Maybe these kind of things have been here before, but it seems new to me.
We saw them coming, though.
Yeah. Let's start with the employer. What can or can they not do legally to require their employees to, for instance, be vaccinated?
Employers, private employers, let's talk about that first, certainly have the rights to require vaccination. And as part of the vaccination requirements, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has advised in numerous guidances issued out this year, last year, to make accommodations for physical disabilities or religious beliefs that are against vaccination. And the vaccination policies typically also allow for, if someone qualifies for an exception, to wear masks and to take COVID tests to make sure they're not positive on a pretty frequent basis. Occasionally, it may allow for remote work, but it often depends on the industry. And in the public sector, this is where things have changed a little bit, Greg. The public sector case 1 month ago decided August 2nd, 2021 by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit, which covers Illinois. It's involving the suit against Indiana University. And the students were claiming that their due process rights under the 14th Amendment were violated by the vaccination policy of Indiana University, and they sought an injunction. They lost because the policy had exceptions in case someone didn't want the vaccination to either not attend the school at all ever again, or take a semester or two off, or don the mask and take the COVID-19 tests. This was a signal for a couple reasons. One was that the plaintiffs then tried to get a U.S. Supreme Court review. They lost in that effort recently. Justice Barrett denied their attempt to try to lodge an appeal through the injunction process with the U.S. Supreme Court, and she's certainly a very conservative justice. The other part of this is that all of this started in 1905. The U.S. Supreme Court in 1905, when smallpox was the epidemic, issued a decision in 1905, Jacobson versus Massachusetts, where the city of Cambridge, right outside Boston, had a mandatory vaccination ordinance with no exceptions. And that was upheld by a court that was certainly anything but liberal. And it was a 7-2 vote in favor of upholding mandatory vaccination ordinance. And when I looked at the case, I saw there was a dissent, and I thought, uh-oh, is there a dissent here that people against vaccination can start to use? No, the dissent was they didn't think the majority was strong enough in enforcing the ordinance, and they cited studies from European countries that showed how the smallpox vaccine was effective, and they didn't like the fact that the majority allowed a plaintiff to prove that the vaccine might actually harm him, which the plaintiff in that case tried to do but had absolutely no real evidence to support that contention and lost.
At what point does a court determine that any vaccine, like this new vaccine, is effective enough without side effects to warrant a mandatory vaccine?
Dan, that's an interesting question because that gives our modern lens that may not apply. And by that, I mean the test that applies under the Constitution is rational basis. Rational basis does not require 100% effectiveness without any side effects. It looks at the greater overall common good effect, as in all the regulations do. And tying it back to employers, as we started with, employers have obligations under OSHA to provide a safe and effective workplace. And as we know from the meatpacking plants in the Midwest, that became a big issue when they were not separating personnel and not masking. So you could imagine that their COVID-19 policies for returning or hiring or new or existing employees are pretty strict because of the food safety issue as well as the worker safety issue.
So, Ambrose, I'm an employee now. Let's flip on that side of things. I'm an employee. I am hesitant about the vaccine. I am irritated by any mandate, specifically the mask one. So I feel like I'm in between a rock and a hard place. Am I going to be forced to leave my job that I like? I like my job, but I don't want to follow these rules. Does the employee have any legal standing?
Greg, you just put your finger on it. If you have an employee who doesn't like to follow the rules, what usually happens? You usually don't stay in that workplace.
Right.
And these kind of requirements, until someone has actual evidence to show that either the mask and the social distancing or the vaccine don't work, they will eventually lose the majority of those cases. The National Academy of Sciences released a study in June saying that hand washing and social distancing is not enough without masking, and that evidence is getting put into the courts, like in Florida, where the governor there had an anti-masking mandate, and the governor in Florida lost the first round in that. He hopes to do better on the appeal, but it didn't surprise me that a judge might say, well, look, the state has an obligation to provide a safe school environment.
So from an employee standpoint, there's not much wiggle room. There's no wiggle room.
Well, what about this case, though? And I know people like this. They're a little older, in their late 60s. They have fought cancer, and they've pretty much beat it. But they're immune compromised, and their doctor, who's a very good one, said, I just right now wouldn't get the shot. Is there any, I mean, if you actually had a doctor come to bat for you and showed the fact that you fought cancer, whatever, is that an out, a reasonable out?
Well, that's the medical basis. And the immunosuppressant situation is interesting because some require more vaccines and some, as you know, their doctors are telling them, no, you shouldn't take any vaccines. And then they would be under a mask and COVID-19 testing regimen. So there are options available. I think what it is that as a society, we were hoping this would go away in a few months, and now it's a year and a half. And as your interviews with Dr. Casper indicate, we may be managing COVID-19 for a long time, or certainly longer than we thought. So I think that everybody has to acknowledge that we have to work together on some of these situations, but also be flexible, while at the same time realizing you can't manage a virus without steps that acknowledge the existence of a virus like COVID-19. And its current variant, the Delta variant, is so much more contagious. And I think of the line drawers who said, well, it was only people over 80, and then it was 60, and then it was 40. And now we have, what, over 300 kids a day going into hospitals?
Yeah, I think there's 500,000 kids now that have it.
Yeah.
We're out of time. Ambrose, we always have more to talk about than we have time to do it in. But the legal aspect of this, just a real quick answer here. Do you anticipate that we will see a big influx of lawsuits by people trying to get their employer to change their mind? Or is this going to be, by virtue of the cases you've already indicated, that door's already shut?
I think it's not a favorable door. And I think the societal response will instead, if the law doesn't seek remedies people seek, will result in changing workplaces, which we're already seeing with the growth of remote work.
Yeah, no doubt. Thank you, sir. Stay safe. We'll talk to you next time. That's Ambrose McCall.